And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy, being broadcast around the world on shortwave radio, on the American Voice Network, and on our internet site, powerofprophecy.com, 24/7. That's 7 days a week. You can listen to this program on powerofprophecy.com. You can also order our programs by audio tape or compact disc, CD. If you'd like to do that, we'll give you our 1-800 number. Each week we offer the program for $8. Please add $5 shipping and handling, and we'll be glad to give you the program for that week. Now, today we're going to be talking about a very interesting subject, and one I think that will be of great benefit to you, because this is a question that's come up very frequently. And in fact, you may have been presented with this question yourself and asked these things. And I know that I have on many occasions, by letter, by email, even in person, by phone. People ask me all the time. They ask, Tex Mars, are you an anti-Semite? Are you anti-Semitic? I never answer those questions. I never have. I don't believe I've ever, I may have, I can't remember ever responding yes or no when people ask me that. I think it's a little bit like, you know, the question, you know, are you still beating your wife? Well, or are you cheating? Are you still continuing to cheat on your husband? Well, if you're not cheating on your husband and if you're not beating your wife, how can you answer the question? No matter what you say, yes or no, you're really admitting to a falsehood that doesn't exist if you're a faithful person and so forth. I remember Troy Aikman, who was former quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, All-Pro, one of the greats in football history. I'm sure he'll be in the Football Hall of Fame someday, won two or three Super Bowls. But Troy Aikman was asked the question. He was a very handsome guy and had girlfriends, but he wasn't married. And I think he was, 28 or 30 years old. And I guess some people just thought that, you know, a guy like that ought to be married. So at a news conference, he was asked a question, are you a homosexual? Are you gay? Well, he just looked at the guy and he said, I'm not going to answer that. That's outrageous. Why should I have to answer a question like that? And he went right on to the next question. And, you know, frankly, if you are a homosexual and somebody asks you that question, well, admit up to it. I am a homosexual. I mean, if you're doing it, don't be ashamed of it. I know I would be. I definitely would be ashamed of it, but I don't have to worry about shame because I don't do it. It's pretty sickening to me, but probably was to Troy Aikman too. And by the way, you know, the guy has a lovely family now, and he is married. So, you know, I guess there are folks out there, men and women, who are judged on their marital status. And some people accuse them of being gay. Now, again, I'm not saying you should hide that. If you are gay, go ahead and admit it. If you're not, say, no, I'm not. But really, on the other hand, I think Troy Aikman did the right thing. That's outrageous. Shut up. I'm not going to answer that. You know, he didn't have anything to hide, but he also didn't have to, you know, even in saying, no, I'm not homosexual, you're sort of giving power to the person asking the question. When a person asks me, am I an anti-Semite? I know what they're getting at. They don't agree with what I'm teaching. They probably don't even know what I'm teaching. They think they do. And so in their anger, in their frustration, because they have no facts, nothing to document and attack me with the facts, they come up with these labels, these accusations. Are you an anti-Semite? And, you know, I look at people like that with disgust. They don't even know what an anti-Semite is. Well, today we're going to talk about exactly what it is. What is an anti-Semite? You know, you may find out, dear friends, that you are an anti-Semite. I want to ask you the question as we delve into this very, very controversial issue. Look in the mirror. Might you be an anti-Semite? You could be. A lot of my best friends are anti-Semites. They don't hate Jews. They're not prejudiced against Jews. They're not prejudiced against anybody. But some of my best friends are still being labeled they're not, as haters. They're being called anti-Semites. And when this kind of false accusation starts, often you have no defense because you don't know what anti-Semitism even means. It's broadly defined. I was sent a little brochure. I think it was somebody who thinks I'm anti-Semite, and he sent me a brochure from the Jewish ADL. Now, talk about a hater group. They're a bunch of haters. They hate Gentiles. You know that by their materials and such. The Jewish ADL, they're a bunch of, just evil people, haters. Now, it's interesting, though, that they define, if I got it right, in their little booklet, they define someone anti-Semite who expresses, dissenting views from Israel. Now, if you express views from what Germany is doing, about what Germany is doing, if you're opposed to what Germany is doing, or Russia, or Iran, nobody calls you names. The president of Mexico came to America and spoke to our Congress a week ago, and he said terrible things about our immigration policies and laws. Of course, Mexico has even stricter immigration laws, and they are prejudiced. They are haters of Anglos. Many Mexican people I met, unfortunately, are wonderful folks, but some of them are haters of white people, of, Anglos, I call it. It's just true. There are many blacks out there that are haters of whites, but they don't get all the bad press. It's only the whites that, say anything negative about blacks. If you say, I don't agree with Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson, there's probably a million black people out there. I say, well, you're nothing but a bigot. You hate black people. You're a racist. You don't have to be a racist. You just don't care for what, Al Sharpton's tried to dish out to the masses or Jesse Jackson is saying these days, because both those guys are crooks, criminals, liars, cheats. And the case of Jesse Jackson, cheater on his wife, adulterer, with payoff money to his mistress and so on. But if you say those things, you're a hater, man. You hate black people. Yeah, sure. Well, so anytime you come up against the politically correct, they'll say bad things about you. Now, I could get on this program all day and talk about how terrible Saudi Arabia is. I can talk horrible things about people from Greece or Turkey or Italy. And everybody would say, okay, that's your opinion, Tex Mars. I don't necessarily agree with you, Tex Mars, but that's okay. So you say bad things about Italy or about Belgium or France. Okay. But if you say one word about Israel, people just go and, they want to become astronauts. They're flying so high in their hatred toward you. How dare you say anything about Israel? Well, they're God's chosen. God's going to punish you. And you ought to go to prison for that. Oh, my. They don't really go nuts. They'll call you an anti-Semite, and that's only the first word or term that they'll call you. Now, even if you say about something about a Jewish person who is dead. In Germany, they actually passed a law that you can't even say anything about dead Jews. They have a law where they'll put you in prison for, listen to this, defaming the dead. Now, You can say bad things about Abraham Lincoln or Mark Twain or Robert E. Lee or Thomas Jefferson, but don't say anything bad about David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel. You're defaming the dead. How dare you? Defaming the dead? That's weird, isn't it? Defaming. I don't think they mind very much, the dead, whether you defame them or not. I don't think there's no damages. There's no hurt there by them. You know, recently, Patrick Buchanan, Pat Buchanan, who ran for president on the Reform Party ticket, the political commentator, wrote an article and he says, I don't think it's a good idea to have 9 Supreme Court justices in America. And not one of them, he says, is Protestant and 3 are Jews. 1/3 of the Supreme Court, he said, is made up of Jews. Or it will be when Elena Kagan, a Jewish lesbian, is confirmed by the Senate. She's been nominated by, Obama. Now, many people believe there will be 4 on the Supreme Court because Sonia Sotomayor, many people believe, in fact, is a Hispanic Jew. There are French Jews, American Jews, Italian Jews, Turkish Jews, and they believe she is a Hispanic Jewess. I believe she is too, from what I've read about her background. So we probably have 5 Roman Catholics and 4 Jews on the Supreme Court with the addition of Kagan. Now, Buchanan thought that's not a good idea to have 3 Jews. I mean, think about it. Jews make up only about 2-3% of American population. Why should they have 33% of the judge position on the Supreme Court? He didn't think, Buchanan, that that's representative of America. And you know, he's right. Meanwhile, I read an article in the New York Times where a woman columnist wrote she thinks it's wonderful that there are 3 Jews and 6 Roman Catholics on the court now, or will be. And she said, as a liberal and as a member of the left wing, I think it's just fabulous. Okay. Now, Buchanan was promptly attacked by Jewish organizations. A number of them got together. In fact, they wrote a letter to the syndicate. The syndicate now is really just a newspaper column publishing group that he writes for. And his columns are published in newspapers throughout the United States thanks to this syndicate, the publishing syndicate. And the Jews demanded now that Buchanan be fired and that he not allowed to publish his columns in any newspapers anymore. They say he's an anti-Semite. And there seems to be a growing league of anti-Semites. In fact, I'm thinking of starting an organization called the League of Anti-Semites. Or maybe the National Association of Anti-Semites, the NAS. Or the World Committee on Anti-Semitism. You know, WCAS. You always got to have an acronym for these things, don't you? You know, got to have the letters there. Okay, well, Billy Graham, you know, some years ago was in the Oval Office of the White House visiting with Richard Nixon. And Nixon asked him what he thought about the Jews. And Billy Graham said, well, you know, there are satanic Jews that are ruling America behind the scenes, and they're very evil and dangerous. And if we don't do something about it, we're going to lose our freedoms here in America. Satanic Jews, said Billy Graham, the evangelist. And Nixon said, do you really think so? And Billy Graham said, yes. And Nixon said, I believe that too. But Billy, don't say anything in public. They'll scald you. Now, I'm paraphrasing what Nixon told him. Don't tell anybody what you think, because you'll get scalded by the media for even saying these things. Whether it's true or not, you can't say them. Now, unfortunately for Billy Graham, or fortunately, whatever you want to call it, everything that happened in the Nixon Oval Office of the White House was being recorded. They had a recording machine taking everything in, and they kept all the tapes, except for the few that they destroyed. But this one was published by the Richard Milhouse Nixon Presidential Library several years ago. They came out with this tape. To Billy Graham's embarrassment, Billy Graham at first said, I didn't say that. That's not, you know, I didn't do that. But there was the tape, and they played his voice on national television. And he said, okay, I admit to it. I had forgotten. And I can't remember even saying those things, but I guess I did because it's on tape. Yeah, huh? But that's certainly not the way I thought. I don't think that of the Jews at all. I'm not prejudiced. I mean, he began to tap dance and ballet and, you know, wish-wash every which way he could. I'm not prejudiced. Please believe me. You know, I'm almost 90 years old, but I don't want anybody to think I'm anti-Semitic. It could destroy my career. Say what? Your career. You're 90 years old. You've either made it or you haven't. And what is your career anyway? Your career should be to follow Jesus and tell the truth, Billy Graham. But he's worried about being called anti-Semitic when these tapes came out from the Nixon Library. Now, Truman had his memoirs published by a major publisher, but it seems that he kept a diary every day, President Harry S. Truman. And he would write in a diary his thoughts every day in the White House. And one day he said that in his diary, Bernard Baruch, the powerful Jewish financier, barged into my office today, didn't even have an appointment, and demanded that I do some this or that for the Jews in Israel. He said, you know, these people think that they run the White House. I'm getting tired of it, he said. He said the Jews, when they get people in a subordinate position, are the worst masters in the world. They treat people terribly. And the Jews don't care anything about other peoples, other nations, other racial groups. All they care about is themselves. They're selfish. Wow. Now, nobody knew about that being in Truman's diary until just a few years ago, because that never made it into his memoirs. In fact, according to the Truman Presidential Library, and I've been there and visited it in Independence, Missouri, they've got his diary there in their records, and they say, we don't have that page. It appears that what happened was the page showed up later, crumpled, thrown behind a file cabinet. Somebody took it out of his diary, crumpled it up, and threw it behind a file cabinet. And I guess they were finally cleaning up the place one day, and they found it. What Truman had said about the Jews. What didn't make his memoirs. And oh, it led to the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and the Houston newspaper and all the Newsweek and Time magazine, all of them which were owned by Jewish interest, blasting Truman. This proves that this president was an anti-Semite. He was a Jew hater. Look what he said about the Jews. In his diary, what a horrible person. Now remember that Harry S. Truman is the one who made Israel a nation. He and Stalin, Joe Stalin, the dictator, the monster, the bloody, filthy rat from Moscow and the Kremlin, agreed together to make Israel a nation and to steal the land from the Palestinians. And in 1948, that happened. Within 2 minutes of each other, both the United States and Russia, or the Soviet Union, recognized Israel as a nation. Within 2 minutes of each other, they were the first two nations in the world to do so. The communist Stalin and the capitalist Truman. If it weren't for Truman, Israel would not be a nation today. And they would not be able to be suppressing, oppressing, massacring, murdering, and torturing Palestinians. And they continue to steal their lands to this day. All because of Truman's help to the Jews. Isn't it amazing then that they accuse him of being an anti-Semite? Now, Jimmy Carter tried to do what he could to bring peace to the Middle East. He's written several books about the Arabs and the Jews, and he would invite Begin and the other prime ministers and I guess it was Yasser Arafat back then, to Camp David in Maryland, the presidential retreat, and how peace talks with them. But Carter said the problem was that Menachem Begin, a former terrorist murderer, he really was actually, former terrorist murderer of the Irgun terrorist gang in Israel, as prime minister of Israel, he wasn't interested in peace at all. And privately, when Yasser Arafat and the Arab representatives were not around, Carter said that Begin came to him and you know, there at Camp David and said, "We are not going to give up any land to the Palestinians or the Arabs. Not one inch. God wants us to have it." Well, this was very strange because Menachem Begin practiced Buddhism. He was a practicing Buddhist. Didn't even go to synagogue except for on political occasions in Israel. So here's a Buddhist saying, "God wants us to have the land." Well, the Jews have always said that. But of course, Jeremiah, in the book of Jeremiah, he was Jewish, or at least Israel, Israelite. And Jeremiah, the great prophet, said, "You, Israel, have broken the covenant." That covenant by which you were given the nation of Israel and Jerusalem, you have broken the covenant. And because of that, you're going to be taken captive by the Babylonians. And indeed, that prophecy came to pass. But I suppose Jeremiah was an anti-Semite. Prophet of Israel, but he was an anti-Semite. And you know, he was treated appropriately. He was arrested for being an anti-Semite. He was called unpatriotic to Israel. They put him in a prison cell. They beat him unmercifully. Only rightly so. Prophet of God be damned. He was an anti-Semite. He said bad things about his people. Said they've broken the covenant. But today Menachem Begin says the covenant was never broken. We still have the covenant. Excuse me just a minute. I have to say 5 minutes of om, om, om. He would sit lotus-legged, see, and say his Buddhist prayers. Prime Minister of Israel. Oh, my. Eisenhower did a lot to help the Jews during World War II and afterwards. He freed many Jews from concentration camps run by the Nazis. It's interesting, though, as President of the United States, when Israel carried out an unprovoked aggression against Egypt in a war and had the help of France and Britain, all those three nations, Israel, France, and Britain together, attacked Egypt. Innocent Egypt, by the way, because Israel wanted more land in the Sinai Desert there. And so they just decided with Britain and France's help, they were going to attack Egypt and just steal the land. And they did. Until Eisenhower, President of the United States, 5-star general in the army, savior of the Jews in the concentration camp, stood up and said, "This will not stand. This is unprovoked aggression by Israel, and you will give back this land you have stolen from the Egyptians or else." Ooh, boy. Now, that's an anti-Semite speaking. Eisenhower was hated ever after. And you know, one of the things that Eisenhower, the way he was punished, they said, even after all of this service to the United States, the, you know, 5-star general, commander-in-chief of our European forces in World War II, victorious, president of the United States for 8 years, because you betrayed the Jews in this unprovoked war that we carried out against the Egyptians, because of that, we will not make you a rich man when you get out of office. It was customary, you see, in the United States, and it always has been so, that if a president was favorable to the Jews, Wall Street rewarded them significantly. Gerald Ford, Bill Clinton, all of them have been rewarded. Ike? No. Truman? Uh-uh. Truman went back to Independence, Missouri, and he died in the same house that he and his wife, Bess Truman, had owned for decades. They said he was a modest man that didn't lack riches. Well, it didn't matter what he was, because all he got was the meager presidential, pension. Same thing goes for Ike. When Ike left, they didn't make him chairman of General Motors. They didn't make him, biggity wig of this or whatever. Ike became, as I remember it, president of a college. President of a college. A very humble job for a man of his stature. No, he was not rewarded at all. And Billy Graham, fortunately for him, was almost 90 years old when these revelations came out. Nixon, of course, was forced in disgrace back to California. No rewards for him either. So, Barack Obama, believe me, unless he betrays them, he's their man and he's doing a very good job for Israel. He will be sufficiently rewarded. Now, think about it. Jimmy Carter, anti-Semite. Ike, anti-Semite. Truman, yes. Nixon, absolutely. Billy Graham, yes. If the Jewish definition is correct. And I suppose Tex Mars would be too. Now, one of the things that has got Billy Graham, Jimmy Carter, President Eisenhower, President Truman in trouble, and by the way, I didn't even throw in President Kennedy in there, John F. Kennedy, but he was assassinated because he told the Jews, you will give up the atomic weapons that you've stolen from America. And that put him on the list to be assassinated. Of course, John F. Kennedy had to have been an anti-Semite, according, I'm sure, to groups like the ADL and the others. He would meet their criteria. If you don't bow down and kiss the back end or the feet, at least, of the Jews and Israel, you are an anti-Semite. Okay? That's just the way it goes. Now, in their estimation, of course. Now, I was thinking recently about anti-Semitism. And I was thinking of all the men and a few women who have been anti-Semites over the years. The great Protestant reformer, Martin Luther, did many favors and helped out Jews in many situations. And frequently, Jewish rabbis visited Martin Luther and carried out a fellowship with him. But then when he really looked into and discovered what the Jews were planning and what they were up to, and especially when Martin Luther, this great, great man of God, when he discovered what they said about Jesus in their own holy book, the Talmud, it was too much for him. And he wrote a little book about it. It's entitled, again, this is a book authored by Martin Luther, On the Jews and Their Lies. On the Jews and Their Lies by Martin Luther. But of course, I have been told, in fact, I was told by Christian evangelists that Martin Luther, as it turns out, was an anti-Semite. He used to be honored in Protestant seminaries everywhere. After all, there would be no Protestant movement if it had not been for Martin Luther. But nevertheless, he is hated today by the John Hagees and the James Dobsons and all the others, the Paul Crouches and Pat Robertsons. Martin Luther is in disrepute because, after all, he was an anti-Semite when he wrote his book about the Jews and their lies. Well, when we come back in just a minute, I'm going to introduce you to some more anti-Semites. And we're going to find out what the definition of anti-Semitism really is. Because, friends, maybe you're quaking in your boots right now to discover that you too just could be an anti-Semite. Hello, friends. Tex Mars. I hope you've got my new book, Conspiracy World. It's a truth teller's compendium of amazing things, forbidden knowledge, revelations many never before exposed to public view. The book is as big as a huge telephone directory in a major city in America, has, oh, probably several hundred photographs in it, and I believe there's never been a book published like it, ever. Conspiracy World by Tex Mars. You can order it from our ministry, powerofprophecy.com. Go online and order the book. Or you can simply phone us toll-free. Our number here is 1-800-234-9673. 1-800-234-9673. When you order Conspiracy World or any of our books or videos, CDs or audio tapes, well, just know this, that we'll be delighted to send you our free monthly newsletter, Power of Prophecy, every month. This month's issue is entitled Inventors of Evil Things. You'll want to know who those inventors are. So I hope you'll get this Power of Prophecy newsletter. But you will automatically be put on our mailing list and receive our monthly newsletter for at least 6 months when you order anything from the ministry. Maybe you'd like to order today's program. Are you an anti-Semite? If so, just pick up the phone and order it by using your charge card. Phone us toll-free, 1-800-234-9673. Now, Conspiracy World is $25. Add $5 for shipping and handling, a total of $30 postpaid as for Conspiracy World. You can write to us at Power of Prophecy or to Tex Mars, 1708 Patterson Road, Austin, Texas, 78733. I want to tell you how much I appreciate those of you who are able, in addition to ordering books like Conspiracy World or perhaps today's audio tape or CD, and always specify which you want, CD or audio tape. Most people today order CDs, but if you order the audio tape, and we'll give you either one. I'm glad to do so. But I want to mention how much I appreciate those of you who are able to give even more in love gifts, offerings, donations to Power of Prophecy and to Tex Mars. And I'll tell you, if it had not been for you these last few years, we wouldn't be here. You know, some people say to us, why do you sell things? Well, first of all, that's how we keep the ministry going, by selling books and such. But, of course, it would be wonderful just to get so many love gifts in that we wouldn't have to sell things. But that hasn't been the case up to now. Some people say, well, why don't you just depend on God? Well, we do. And God moves many people to order our books, videos, and tapes, and CDs. He's moved many people. And it's strange to me how every once in a while, I don't get many complaints, but a person will say, I can't believe I have to pay a Christian ministry $30 for a book. But they don't mind going down to Barnes & Noble or Borders books. They don't mind going to Amazon.com on the Internet and ordering and paying for it. And you know, the difference there is when you buy something from Barnes & Noble, that's going to go in the pockets of some pretty rich shareholders. Now, I don't deny that. That's a fine thing if you want to help Barnes & Noble shareholders and the CEO and chairman of the board and all those kind of things at Barnes & Noble or Amazon.com. But you know, Jeff Bezos, who is the CEO and head of Amazon.com, the guy's a billionaire many times over. I don't think he really needs your money, but we certainly do. But isn't that the way God has always handled things? You know, the rich get richer, and nevertheless, we never won't here at Power Prophecy. When we start to feeling like, wow, maybe we're going to have to close down someday. Maybe we're going to have to discontinue our radio program. We get a love gift in the mail. Happens all the time. I know just recently I thought, I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, we're going to have to cut staff. We're going to have to, we're already watching our pennies. We watch the utilities, watch our energy. We try to cut the heating and air conditioning off right when we leave and try to keep it down as the thermostat down. We just watch everything and trying to cut cost. Just recently, we battled and argued with telephone companies and our printers, trying to keep our costs down. And just when I think, well, we're going to have to close down or something's going to happen, suddenly I'll get a love gift in the mail. I know we got one just a week ago here for $4,000, and I was beginning to worry. Sometimes, though, they're just for $5 or $10 or $20. But those add up, my friends. Don't ever think that your $5 or $10 or whatever it is does not count. It absolutely does. In fact, 95% at least of the love gifts we receive are $50 and under. They are. And I want to assure you of how much we love you for that. And right now, as we're on the air, I want to pray to Jesus Christ that he will richly reward you for your faithfulness to this ministry. Did you know that we're getting close to 25 years? I think we got several months to get to that, but we've been here almost a quarter of a century. And I mean, there have been so many people and government organizations tried to shut us down. They haven't been able to do it. And I think it's because of you who've given so much to this ministry. Now listen, if you're a little a woman or man on Social Security and you find it hard enough now just to be able to afford to pay your rent or your utilities, I'm not asking you to give a dime. Okay? I'm not. And I'm not one of these preachers that says, well, you know, you give me $100 and God will give you back $500. I don't know what God's going to give you when you give to this ministry, but I know something. It is true you cannot outgive God. And it seems to me that my greatest rewards have not been monetary throughout the years, but the changes in the life of people through this ministry. That's the greatest reward I've ever got. When a person writes to me and says, Tex, your ministry or your radio program changed my life. That is the most fabulous gift I could get. I've never been a person that lacked things like Christmas, Father's Day. You know, I mean, Wanda, I think she's almost embarrassed at me because I don't look for gifts. I'm sort of surprised when my birthday comes around. You know, in fact, I have been surprised on a few occasions. Suddenly, you know, Wanda has a gift for me or a friend has a gift for me. And I'll say, what's that for? And they'll say, well, it's your birthday, dummy. Hello, okay. I'd forgotten my own birthday. Well, all right, thank you. And I'm appreciative of that. But my whole point is, it really is better to give than to receive. And when you give to God's work, there's no greater thing you can give, my friends. You know, they're really not. You'll have to admit, if you've listened to this radio program for many, many months or years, you know I very, very rarely ask for money. And I've already been talking about it 5 minutes here. And I'm not going to spend another second on it, except to say this. God bless you for giving. And I'm asking Jesus Christ right now, and I know he listens. The Bible says, whatever you ask in the name of Jesus, you will receive. And you know what? I believe that. I'm asking Jesus Christ to bless the life of every person who gives to this ministry. What kind of blessings are you going to get? I don't know, but I think it's going to be more than you can even imagine. But then I'm just a person that has a lot of faith. It's been proven in my life. God's given me so many things. He's given me loved ones that had healings in their body. But best of all, healings in their heart. That's the kind of gifts I love. Okay, let's return to our regular program now. We're talking about anti-Semitism. Evidently, if you say anything at all about Jews or Israel or the Jewish religion, you're just a mean old crummy old anti-Semite. That's what they say. Now, isn't it strange that in our society you can smash and bash and lash out at Christianity all day long. In fact, that seems to be the media's favorite sport, to bash Christians and Jesus and the Bible, but don't dare say a word against the Jewish Talmud or against Judaism or the Jews as a people. You can say bad things about America. You know, it's interesting, and this is what really makes me angry. I got another letter just today, and it said, Tex, I've been with your ministry a long time, and I like all the things you've been saying. You know, you've been really exposing evil here in America for a long time, in the government, in society, and culture. But how dare you say anything about God's chosen people, the Jews, and Israel? And I got that, and I thought, here's a man blessed by America writing me. I mean, many of us have gotten such material blessings by being a citizen of one of the greatest countries on earth, the United States of America. And with all these blessings, this man did not mind me criticizing America for its sins, its transgressions, its failings. Right on, Tex, bash America. Just don't bash the Jews. You can say bad things about Americans. Don't say anything about Jews. You can just lash out at Washington, but don't say anything about Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. If you do, God's going to punish you, and you're an anti-Semite. You're a hater. You need to be closed down. You need to be put in prison. Wow. So that's what anti-Semitism is. You can be anti-American, but oh, God forbid that you be anti-Semite. Now, again, this is strange because many of the Jews, in fact, DNA scientifically has now proven, blood tests have shown, that most of the inhabitants of Israel that claim to be Jews are not Jews. They're Khazars. They come from Turkish, Mongolish, European stock. Now you can get the book we have, Synagogue of Satan by Hitchcock. I wrote the foreword for that book. And in my foreword, I tell you all about the kingdom of Khazaria. You know, the Jerusalem World Report magazine a few years ago did a whole issue on Khazaria, and they admitted it. Arthur Kessler, a professor, Dr. Arthur Kessler, wrote a book called The 13th Tribe, and he said most Jews are actually not really of Jewish Israelite stock. They're Khazarians. Now, I'm not going to get into all the things about Khazaria, but basically, the nation of Khazaria, that once was in the area now where the nation of Kazakhstan is, were pagans. And they had a king. Now, this occurred around, 600 years ago or so. They had a king named Bulan. And Bulan had a problem, the king of Khazaria. And it was a very powerful nation at the time. You see, he was trying to determine what religion his people should be. And he had the power as the monarch to force people to become one religion or another. Now, some people wanted him to become a Christian. They said, your nation should give up its paganism and become Christian. But others said, well, you really need to become a Muslim nation. While still others said, Judaism is the way to go. He was sort of caught. What am I going to do? For one thing, he was afraid he was going to be attacked by one nation or another. And so he said, I've got to ally my country with some powerful coalition. Finally, he studied the major religions, and he determined the one he liked the best was the Judaism. So he then put out an edict or an order, a command for all of the people of Khazaria to become Jews. And you know, they had to. They became Jews, and then he set up synagogues everywhere. Well, as history would have it, the Khazars, the Khazar Empire, like so many empires throughout history, came to its fatal end. But the people themselves who had converted to Judaism, but who were not Jews, but were of a different blood type and race, they migrated. A lot of them stayed there in the Kazakhstan area, which finally was merged into the USSR. The Soviet Union, and now is its own country. But many of them went over into Romania, to Hungary, to Czechoslovakia, to Poland. And there they took up the language and married and intermarried with those peoples. And then finally they went into Western Europe, into Germany and France and so forth, Belgium and Italy. And, of course, Russia still has many Khazarian Jews to this day. So they were converts to Judaism. Now, when Israel was founded as a nation, the majority of the Jews who went to live there, to reside in this newfound nation in 1948, were Khazarian Jews. And in fact, they began to discriminate and persecute the local Jews, Jews called the Sephardic Jews, who had lived in the Middle East all those years. Hundreds of years, the Sephardic Jews had lived in the area of Israel, known as Palestine, among the Arabs, peacefully. But then comes the Khazarian Jews, the Europeans, and the Russians, and bingo. They said, we're now the top dogs in Israel. Now think of it. They were not even of Jewish extraction, of Jewish stock, of Jewish blood. And most of them had these foreign names. They had to change their name. You know, they had to go from being Rachikov to Goldberg and so on. So what we have is the nation of Israel today is basically made up of people who came from Khazarian stock, but who intermarried with the Russians and the Hungarians and the Poles and the Czechs and the Bulgarians and the French and so forth. Just a mixed blood bunch of people. So when people tell me the Jews were given the nation of Israel by God thousands of years ago, I say, okay, well, who Jew? Who Jew? Who are they? Well, they're anybody that calls himself a Jew, really? Well, you know, I mentioned many times on this show before that we've had a lot of celebrities in America that converted to Judaism. Madonna, the singer, the sex entertainer, whatever she is to be called, she converted to the Kabbalah system of Jewish religion. Back a number of years ago, Sammy Davis Jr., the black entertainer, Frank Sinatra's pal, well, he converted to Judaism. Even Marilyn Monroe took lessons under a rabbi. Here she was at what the Jews call a shiksa, meaning a Gentile slut. And she became a Jew. And that was after she married the Jewish playwright, Arthur Miller. She decided to convert to his religion, which is Judaism. Now, I want to ask you a question, dear friends. If Marilyn Monroe had been politically talented rather than sexually abundantly bestowed, let's call it that way, why, she might have become the first woman prime minister of Israel rather than Golda Meir. Can you imagine Prime Minister Monroe? Prime Minister Sammy Davis Jr.? Oh, my. Well, they're Jews. Davis is a Jew, and so was Marilyn Monroe. But not blood-wise, not DNA. And most of the Jews today, people who call themselves Jews, are not even Jew. So if you're against these Khazars, and by the way, they actually have a name for themselves. They call themselves Ashkenazis. Ashkenazis. Isn't it interesting how the word Nazi derived from the Ashkenazis? Something to think about. Ashkenazis. Not blood Jews, but just converted Jews. Throughout the centuries, and some of them so long ago, they don't even remember they converted. Now, here's a question for you, dear friends. Are you an anti-Semite if you even discuss these things? Arthur Kessler, who wrote his book, The 13th Tribe, was he anti-Semite? Were the editors of Jerusalem World Report, were they, in fact, anti-Semites? Maybe, if you go along with what the Jews had to say about the subject. I think they would say it's anti-Semite to even let people know about these things. Wow. Well, Jesus let us know about them. And of course, Jesus was an anti-Semite too. Paul let us know about them, the Apostle Paul. And he said, I'm of the tribe of Benjamin, of Israelite stock. But of course, the Jews today say he was a self-loathing and self-hating Jew. They say the same thing about Jesus, of course, about Stephen, the first martyr of the Christian faith. And if you go back in history, Isaiah, who said the nation of Israel had become a whore, well, he must have been an anti-Semite too. In Ezekiel, and read Ezekiel 8, and you'll really discover some amazing things. Ezekiel said that basically they were worshiping satanic religion, the Jews of his day. Jesus said the same thing. Jesus said, you are of your father, the devil. Was the prophet Ezekiel also an anti-Semite? Well, likely, if you use today's standards. Now, let's just go to Jesus Christ, because he was the biggest anti-Semite probably that ever lived. I mean, really, it has to be. Even though he loved the Jews, and he would have done anything to try to get them to accept the truth. But by telling the truth, he became an anti-Semite and a hater, according to the estimation of many Jews, to this very day. Even in their holy book, the Talmud, they call him a blasphemer, and they say he's boiling in excrement, hot, burning excrement in hell today. Jesus is suffering in hell for being a blasphemer. That's what the Jews say in their most holy book, the Talmud. Now, listen to what it says here in John chapter 8. Now, remember, John wrote this. John was the disciple of Jesus, and he was a Jew. But he must have been an anti-Semite, or he would not have reported these terrible things. Now, Jesus said to the Jews, who evidently did not understand what he was talking about most of the time, in verse 43, he says, "Why do you not understand my speech, even because you cannot hear my word? Ye are of your father the devil, and the lust of your father ye will do." He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he, the devil, speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. And because I tell you the truth, you believe me not. He that is of God, says in verse 47, heareth God's words. Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God. Wow. Well, what was the Jews' response? Here it was. They answered him and said, you have Beelzebub in you. You have a devil in you. You're demon-possessed, Jesus. The Jews accused Jesus of being demon-possessed because he told them the truth. Jesus answered, verse 49, and said, I have not a devil. I don't have a devil in me, but I honor my Father. And you, ye do dishonor me. Wow. The Jews in verse 52 said, Then said the Jews unto him, Now we know that thou hast a devil. Wow. Now we know you have a devil in you. It got so bad there and so heated. Verse 59 says, Then took they up stones to cast at him. They wanted to stone him to death because he told them the truth. You go back to verse 33. They answered him, We be Abraham's seed. Jesus answered them, Verily, verily, I say to you, whoever committeth sin is the servant of sin. I know that you are Abraham's seed, Jesus says in verse 37. I know that you are physically, in other words, of Abraham's seed. But ye seek to kill me, because my word hath no place in you. I speak that which I have seen with my Father, and you do that which you have seen with your Father. Do you get that, friends? Jesus says, I speak that which I have seen with my Father, God in heaven. But you Jews, you do that which you have seen with your Father, the devil, in other words. Then answered and said unto him, they answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father. But Jesus saith unto them, If ye were Abraham's children, ye would do the works of Abraham. But now ye seek to kill me, a man that hath told you the truth, which I have heard of God. This Abraham did not do. Ye do the deeds of your father. Wow. But they said unto him, We're not born of fornication. We have one Father, even God. Verse 42, Jesus said back to them, If God were your Father, you would love me. For I proceedeth forth and came from God. He sent me. They're not of Abraham. Oh, physically. At that time, many were. Today, almost none are. They're not even true Jews. Racially. Am I an anti-Semite for telling you that? Maybe, according to the Jews. Now, Jesus sent a vision to his prophet John. The same John, by the way, that wrote down these words that I just explained to you, read to you, direct from the New Testament. Which, by the way, I just looked up Wikipedia and I read all about anti-Semitism. And according to almost all the Jews, the whole entire New Testament is anti-Semitic. So I have a question for you. Do you believe the words of Jesus? Then you are an anti-Semite, according to the ADL and the others. Do you believe the New Testament as a Christian? The New Testament. Do you believe what the apostles wrote and said in the book of Matthew, John, Luke, Mark? Then, according to the Jews, you are an anti-Semite. But who are these Jews that accuse you and me of being an anti-Semite? Well, Jesus gave this vision to John, and it's recorded in Revelation 2, verse 9, and Revelation 3, verse 9, and he says to them, he prophesied, Jesus, the spirit of prophecy. What did he say? He said, in the last days, you're going to be greatly persecuted. Many of you will even be put to death. And then Jesus told them who would be behind it. He told us who would hate us, would hate Jesus, would hate the church, would hate the bride of Christ, would hate Abraham's seed. Because if you believe in Jesus Christ and belong to Jesus, according to the book of Galatians or the letter of the Galatians from Paul, you are Abraham's seed. And here's what Jesus said through the book of Revelation. We find it out. We discover it. Those which will put us to death, those who call us anti-Semite, are them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. Them which say they are Jews and are not, but are the synagogue of Satan. They will persecute you, dear friends. They will hate you. They will despise the one who lives in you. The one who has given you the hope of glory, Jesus Christ our Lord. And if they can, they will put you to death for your testimony and your faith. Revelation 2, Revelation 3. That's the end story. No Christian is a hater. Every Christian has love for people of all races, black, yellow, white, brown, Jew, Gentile. There is no difference in the kingdom of God, because out of one blood, Paul said, came all the people on the face of planet Earth. If you hate any people of any race, if you are prejudging them simply because of their racial status, their blood, you're just doing the work of Satan. The true haters are those Jews who want to put you to death, who, when Jesus stood before Pilate, cried out, crucify him. They are the haters. So I ask you once again, dear friends, are you an anti-Semite because you tell the truth? Jesus told the truth. He's hated to this day by many in the Jewish world. You too are hated if you believe the words of Jesus. Why? Because you are a partaker of the greatest thing that has ever happened to mankind, the truth. And it is the truth, Jesus said, that shall set you free. This is Tex Mars. We've been looking at the issue or controversy of, are you an anti-Semite? So, dear friends, are you? Well, until next week, my prayer is that God will richly reward you, be with you, stand beside you, lead you, guide you. And I pray further that you will tune in each week and discover the power of prophecy.